You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Next up on Destination Freedom.
And so as we're talking about police brutality and oversight and justice, we can't forget some of the lives that have been lost that have not been broadcast live on any streaming app or social media, that the propensity for young black men, black people in general, murdered by the police is about 1 in 1,000. If that number was the same for white people, it would be a national crisis, and there would be all kinds of resources that would be pushed to it. As a person of color, you know, I've got a 1 in 3 chance of somehow having some kind of contact with the criminal justice system.
Welcome to Destination Freedom Black Radio Days podcast. I'm producer-director Donnell Betts. I'm proud to share with you a series of interviews with healthcare providers, COVID-19 survivors, and social justice warriors. Next up, my interview with activist, poet, and community organizer John Petrell, also known as Panama Soweto. John talks about his efforts to rename the Stapleton community. The Stapleton community was originally named after Ben Stapleton, who was a former mayor of Denver, but also a member of the KKK. One of the names that had been floating around to replace Stapleton is Mosley Park. If Mosley Park is selected, the community would be named after John Petrell's grandparents, John and Edna Mosley, who were pioneers in aviation and politics. John Mosley was a Tuskegee Airman and drafted the wording for the first Head Start program, while his wife Edna was the first person of color on the Aurora City Council. John Petrell also talks about the problem of police brutality, Elijah McClain, who was a 23-year-old black man killed by Aurora police while walking black. Now, Destination Freedom. We welcome into the program now John Petrell, a.k.a. Panama Soweto.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm so glad you could be with us. And like I said, happy Father's Day to you. Today is Father's Day for a lot of people celebrating that. And you were sharing with me off mic that this would be a very special person to use birthday as well.
First of all, I want to shout out to my wife, Sydney, and my mom, Edna Lorette, and my children, both in Solomon and Little River Jordan, our newest addition. She's actually 7 months and 2 weeks old.
Wow.
Today. Today is also a really special day because my beloved grandfather, Lieutenant Colonel John W. Mosley, would have been 99 years old today. Mm. And he passed away back in 2000. Today is his celebratory day as we remember him and all of the things that he has given our family, including the opportunity to continue the fight for social justice and civil rights, especially here in Denver. So, yeah, it's a very special day.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And we're going to repeat a little bit of that, too. We lost a little bit of that, but once again, let's talk about we're going to talk about a lot of things today. Let's talk about your grandparents in particular. Later on, people will hear a clip that I have from your grandmother, Edna Wilson Mosley, as she talks about her political, just a brief clip about her political career. But yesterday, you invited me to come out to an event. Mm-hmm. An event that is very special, not only to me, to a lot of people here in Colorado, especially in the Denver area. There was a community called Stapleton that was built, some planned neighborhood that was built some years ago, and it continues to be expanded upon. But there was named for Ben Stapleton, who was the mayor of Denver at one time and also a member of the KKK, Ku Klux Klan, a white supremacist organization that unfortunately still exists today. And one of the things that people want to do, have been pressuring on for years, is to rename this community for someone, anyone, you know, someone who was more appropriate than someone who was trying to oppress people. And someone approached you about renaming for these special people that you've been talking about. So let's talk about that a little bit and what the history is behind that.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. In the last week, things have moved pretty quickly. The Stapleton Neighborhood Association and their HOA had actually voted to keep the Stapleton name just last year. And part of, you know, the big controversy about what was happening is that it'd be very expensive to change the name. And some people didn't want to feel like they were being forced to change the name too at the same time. And so this is a conversation that they've had for quite some time as being, you know, one of Denver's newest neighborhoods. And just recently, due to the murder of George Floyd, the murder of Ahmaud Arbery, the murder of Breonna Taylor, and so many others, and the movement and push for civil rights and to the destruction of systematic racism, a lot of these old wounds and questions have come up, and it just so happens that a lot of our leaders and individuals who are in the movement pushing for equality have really forced the issue to be talked about, especially for the naming of Stapleton. And more recently, just within the last few days, Kay Anderson, an elected official to the Denver City DPS school board and activist, you know, made a very public call on CNN for the Stapleton neighborhood to rename itself. And because of that very public call, the Homeowners Association had to have an emergency meeting to discuss it because they now were in the national spotlight and needed to take a stance. So just a couple of days ago, I sat in on their Zoom call just as an observer. And they voted unanimously to start the process to rename the neighborhood, which is incredible. Now, in that conversation, there were no names or possible names that came up, but in a Facebook group that's been started by members of the HOA in Stapleton, there's been considerable talk about what a new name might be. And there was an individual that I do not know. He's a resident of the Stapleton neighborhood by the name of Andrew Reed, and he posted that he thought that Mosley should be considered as one of the names to rename the Stapleton neighborhood. And the reason why this is important is for those of your listeners that don't know the history of Stapleton, too, outside of being a neighborhood before that, it was our airport. Yes. Here in Denver. And so there's a rich tie to aviation here. And so when Mr. Reed suggested the Mosley name being used, he had it in mind that my grandfather's history as a Tuskegee Airman and a retired Lieutenant Colonel in the United States Air Force held a lot of weight, and that it should be considered as a African-American hero with a very a rich, you know, history and background, and not only civil rights, but also in aviation and being a trailblazer. And so I wasn't made aware of this until another friend through Facebook sent me a screenshot of some of his public comments in this Facebook forum. And I immediately was inspired. And by the way, that person's name was Rebecca Stark. And so she's absolutely amazing. We met through another member of our family, which would have been my grandparents' dog, Molly, who was a miniature Pomeranian. And she had just happened to see a picture of Molly on one of my Facebook posts years ago and made the connection, as she had met my grandparents' dog during an event that they had at the assisted living facility that they lived in before both of them passed back, respectively, my grandmother in 2014 and my grandfather in 2000. And so, like, all of these connections have been made through social media, and it really inspired myself and the rest of my family to create a campaign to change the name of the Stapleton neighborhood, the neighborhood formerly known as Stapleton, to Mosley. Not only because of the contributions of my grandfather, but also my grandmother, Edna Mosley. Right, was just as much as of a trailblazer and a civil rights activist on, you know, her own. She was elected to the Aurora City Council and an at-large and served for more than 12 years. She was a gracious the Urban League of Metropolitan Denver. She was a project director for them. She accompanied Governor Roy Romer back in 1988 on a trade mission to China to help develop cultural exchange between Hunan province and Colorado as a sister state. She helped create what is now known as CoBiz Bank, or Colorado Biz Bank. Back then, when she created it with a group of other women, it was called Colorado Women's Bank. It was a bank specifically created to help women get small business loans to be able to, be economically independent and equal.
And ironically, my first bank. You know?
Oh, wow. Yeah, really? Mine too.
My first bank, just because of that, you know, always being around strong women my whole life, you know, having seven sisters. But that when I first moved to Colorado, that was my first bank. There were other reasons too that I won't say, but that was one of the reasons too. And we're going to hear from your grandmother within this interview. So we'll take a break right now and hear from your grandmother in her own words.
There had never been in the history of this city an African American on the Aurora City Council. But that was not my very first effort at political office. I ran for county clerk in Arapahoe County back in the late 70s. Marjorie Page, a Republican woman, had been there forever. And I'm a Democrat, by the way, in case you hadn't guessed. And everybody knew there was no chance to unseat Marjorie Page. However, we needed a candidate. And so I was the sacrificial lamb, so to speak. And I became a candidate. But anyway, naturally, that was unsuccessful. But the first time I ran for city council, I ran from the ward, my ward here in Aurora, which was Ward 5. And narrowly defeated a longtime incumbent. But that gave me a lot of hope to say, well, maybe there is a chance for an African American to be elected to the Aurora City Council. And so in 1991, I chose to run again. And this time I ran at large and I was elected by a very large margin, and which to me was very exciting. Because Aurora, at that time and still, had a very small African-American population. Even though it has grown, the percentages haven't changed too much. So I was elected to my first four-year term in 1991. So I'm now in my third term, having been elected three times to an at-large position. And each time I have been the biggest vote getter in the at-large candidate.
How does it make you feel?
You know, not a day goes by that I don't think about my grandmother and my grandfather. My grandmother especially, she took a lot of time and care in raising myself and my two other brothers and my sister. When my mother didn't have the full capacity to do so. She, you know, really taught me how to enjoy laughter and how to look for the best in other people and to give of yourself. You know, my grandfather taught me things like, don't wait to be asked, you know, and if there are things that need to be done, you do them. And, you know, don't take handouts. Work hard and you can accomplish anything if you put your mind to it. They were the people that put those things, in my head.
Fantastic.
And I don't think about either of them.
The words that you heard that were taken from an interview that I was able to conduct with actually your grandmother and grandfathers many years ago, of course, before their passing, for with Terry Nelson from the Blair Caldwell African American Research Library. We've done just a ton of interviews with these trailblazers, and your grandparents were part of that series that we developed. So I want to give a shout out to Terry for that. And as I said to you off mic, I will send you that entire interview for you and your family to enjoy. So,
yeah, I think the interview itself just hit me in a very personal place, hearing my grandmother's voice, especially today. And I can't thank you enough for sharing that. It's really interesting too, and thinking about that campaign that she ran. My siblings and I, we were a lot of the footwork for getting those lawn signs out there and putting them all around Aurora. So if you ever have one of those Mosley Now lawn signs on your lawn or somewhere near your business, just know that it was one of the few trail kids probably that put them out there. Grandfather would pack up the old Oldsmobile that he had. We called it the Batmobile, the long old black Oldsmobile, and he would throw all the lawn signs in the back with the stakes, and he would pile us up in the back of the car at like 5 a.m. in the morning and just start driving us around neighborhoods. He'd pop the trunk. He wouldn't even get out of the car. And I'd have to get out and grab a stack full of signs and throw the stakes in and start running around in the neighborhood.
Nice. Very nice.
It was said too. Here's a little insider baseball. I don't know if I'm stepping on any toes now or whatever. But one of her rivals, the other candidates for that particular seat, for the at-large seat, we believe, or someone working on their behalf, was stealing our yard signs and using the stakes, because the stakes were so, they were expensive.
Right.
So they were taking our signs down and taking the stakes to use them for their lawn signs. And so grandfather, we would always do like this, basically like an inventory and a quality control, and driving around the neighborhood and seeing where we had put up previous signs and if those signs were still there, and if they were, whether or not they had the stakes with them or if the stakes were missing.
Well, that,
anything like that. So,
horrible tradition carries on today, because a lot of time those other candidates are caught on ring,
stealing. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Yeah.
So if you had it back then, you would have had had some evidence of who was actually taking the signs. So.
Oh wow! It would have been a whole different campaign with the ring network and the ring community. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's beautiful. So let's fast forward a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about you and what you do. We see what the background is for your activism and your great strong words that you always have to deliver. All you talk about the work is being done by our politicians and these woke politicians, I would call them. Tay Anderson,
yes, sir.
Leslie Horan, and different people like that who are doing
Candy Fidabaca, Jamie Torres,
right.
Amanda Coleman. Sandoval. Yeah. We can start going down the list.
Exactly.
Shout out Tay Anderson. We can go down the list.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Yeah, and because this is that interview that you heard from your grandmother was also in that interview was all about black political trailblazers who have been the first or whatever to do. And so now we have this whole influx of people of color in politics. But you can have that, and we've had that before. But this group, they're about doing the work and putting in work. Like you said, let's give a shout out to all, each and every one that we can every time. But one of the things I want to talk to you about too, I know you've been trying to keep that in the forefront along with you, Terrence Roberts, April, young lady that I met the other day at the state capitol, trying to keep the case of Elijah McClain in the forefront. Can you speak on that a little bit?
Yeah, so for those of you all that don't know the story of young Elijah McClain, this young man was walking through a neighborhood in Aurora wearing a mask on his face, and this is before COVID. And he wore a mask because he was anemic and said it kept his face warm. The police were called on him walking through this neighborhood. And upon detaining him, he was murdered in losing consciousness after being put in a chokehold. When the EMTs came, they gave him a shot of ketamine. which eventually caused his heart to fail, and he died. And so as we're talking about police brutality and oversight and justice, we can't forget some of the lives that have been lost that have not been broadcast live on any streaming app or social media, that the propensity for young black men, black people in general, murdered by the police is about 1 in 1,000. If that number was the same for white people, it would be a national crisis, and there would be all kinds of resources that would be pushed to it. As a person of color, you know, I've got a personally a 1 in 3 chance of somehow having some kind of contact with the criminal justice system. And those statistics alone, in any society, should be shocking for any group or any population within a functioning society, nonetheless a democracy. And so when we're talking about the fight for equality, we have to start with this basic fight for our lives, for the right to live, for the right to exist, when there is a system in place that was created for the sole purpose of keeping us subjugated. And we've never had this conversation as a country.
Yes.
But right now, I feel that the temperature is turned up so much, and we are so tired of watching our brothers and sisters and our cousins and our mothers and our fathers being murdered, and hunted in the streets, that we have had no more, and we won't allow it. And we won't allow it anymore. And I think that the moment that find ourselves in right now is a very telling one for who we are as a society, not just as those who are victimized by oppressive systems, but those who help keep those oppressive systems in place. And that our white brothers and sisters and our brothers and sisters of privilege need to make a decision now as to where they stand as humans. That will they allow their fellow countrymen, will they allow their neighbors to be murdered indiscriminately by a component of a system that was originally created to keep us subjugated? There is no doubt that when you look at the history of the police department, that its roots lie solely in the laws that were created for slave catchers.
Yes.
For absolutely. Runaway slave catchers. The same rules apply to bounty hunters. The reason why they can just break in doors or trick you or hunt you down and use any tactic possible. Those same laws that we are to be governed by, the same people that we're supposed to call in an emergency to save our lives, are working in a system and working from a premise that was created to keep us in our place. Not only physically, but emotionally, spiritually. They were created to terrorize us, so that the thought of uprising, the thought of fighting for our own rights, wouldn't even cross our minds because of their brutality. And that is where we have found ourselves. Right. And this moment is so very important for us to not let off the gas. We do not back down. We do not allow whatever bills or legislation might come down from the White House. We know that laws do not regulate opinions and beliefs, that racism is a disease. And unless we address it, face forward, have conversations about it, have dialogue about it, have people openly listen and not just wait for their chance to talk or defend themselves, to not deal with white guilt or white pity, but have a real human conversation about what's happening right now, until we have that, then we'll be forced to repeat this over and over and over and over again, and we won't make any progress.
is beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that. But silence is complicit. You know, if you are silent about this now, especially now, then you're part of the problem. You know, it is now time for your time to speak up as well. And not only to speak up, to take action. You know, action is so important. Our conversations are so important, but the action that follows those conversations is what really is going to make the difference in this country. If we are to ever have this quote-unquote democracy, this quote-unquote perfect union. In order to form this more perfect union, we have to be in this together. Otherwise, it was an imperfect union to begin with. Anytime the people who are making these very beginning are called the founding fathers, and yes, they were the founding fathers because they were father of slaves, you know, owners of slaves. So they were very complicit in what was happening. And like I said, the laws were set up for one to be in control of the other. And that was not going to be changed economically, psychologically, physically, mentally, whatever the case may be. This was set up so another human beings could control other human beings. Anytime you call a person 3/5 of a person, how can you say that all men are created equal? Where's the irony in that?
But the thing though too, Donnie, is that there's no real, for me, the way that I view this, there's no real irony in it because the system was never created for us. They weren't speaking to us when they wrote those words.
Correct.
They were speaking amongst themselves. And so the system itself is working.
Yes.
When we say the system is broken, we mean it's broken for us because we think that we're somehow supposed to fit within that narrative.
Right.
We fit in the narrative of being subjugated by those words, by being oppressed by those words. So when people, I love having these conversations because when people say the system is broken, no, it's not. The system is working to keep the people in power that created it. The system is working for those land-owning,
yes,
privileged white males, period. And there is absolutely no reason to change it other than us voicing our opinions and stopping the system dead in its tracks.
Because the system dead in its tracks. The system. Sorry to interrupt. The system will continue to protect the system. And like I said, the system is not set up to benefit us, anyone other than those original landowners. Because it was written. It was the way it was written. Landowners, that's the only person that had the right to vote. Had to have any kind of voice at the table, you know? And so all these people
poor white men also didn't have the ability to vote or to have any other rights when this country was first being formed. Let's not talk about women.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what color. Let's not talk about the subjugation of women and how long it took for women to even gain the right to vote. Let's not talk about women's suffrage, you know, and shout out to women and the women's suffrage movement. You know, it really was born from the abolitionist movement.
Correct.
You know, with women, really looking at what was happening in this country and saying, we will not stand for this. We have seen this because it's happened to us. And look what's happening now.
Yeah, the same, you know?
And it's you're absolutely right. The system itself, you know, is working its best to maintain, but it realizes that it cannot control without people being complacent and then complicit within it.
I want to have another conversation like this with you. I want to wrap this up. We got about 2 minutes to wrap this
up. Sir. Yes,
to talk about there is a petition that people can sign to help with the name change to Mosley. Can you share that information with people as well?
Absolutely. So 2 days ago, we started a petition on change.org to rename the Stapleton neighborhood, Mosley Park. That petition is live on our website at Mosley, that's Mosley, now, now.com. And when you go to sign that petition, and we're looking for all people to sign the petition.
You don't have to be from the neighborhood, right?
No, you don't have to be from the neighborhood because what we're looking for is a collective. We're looking for people who are in support of this particular name, regardless if they live in Stapleton or not. We would love to have Stapleton residents, which we do, have signed the petition. But what we're looking for is an all-around conglomerate, a collaboration of individuals who feel that the Mosley name is a strong name, and it's a name that represents something good and positive, and it represents a moment for reconciliation.
Now a meeting that continues the process of renaming Denver's Stapleton neighborhood. The campaign is now down to four finalists. They are Central Park, Mosley, Skyview, and Concourse. People who are voting can pick their favorite name or rank their top three.
Renaming things, tearing down statues will not destroy systemic racism, but what it does do is it opens up a dialogue for people that want to know more and want to be better in this fight. Because symbolism matters, especially in fights like this, which are cultural fights. This is a cultural war that we are in the middle of. And it was a cultural war that has been perpetuated by Stephen Miller and William Barr and other individuals located within this administration that occupies the White House right now. And there are symptoms of this cultural war that we have been fighting now for 4 years at least, you know, in everything from immigration to women's rights and the Me Too movement. All of these things have happened. It seems like one tragedy after the next that have led us to this, which is what America always ends up coming back to, which is race. Because we never had a conversation about it. So in our petition, we are asking for people to really show some bravery here and step away from what they find comfortable and normal about how you culture in this country, and accept the contributions of those that have been left out of the history books. Accept the beautiful contributions and the beautiful fight that people of color have put in that ultimately benefits all Americans.
Absolutely. Putting in the work. John Futrell, AKA Panama Soweto. I can't thank you so much again. It's mosleynow.com.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Sure. All right. And we'll continue this conversation another time, because there's never enough time that we have with you. But that's all the time we have for right now. I'm Donnie Betts, and I appreciate you being out there. Take care.
Thank you, Donnie.
Absolutely. Bye-bye. Bye.
That concludes this episode of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check us out at nocredits.com and pick up our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Radio Public, Spotify, etc. Follow us at Twitter at Donnie Betts, hashtag No Credits Production LLC, hashtag Black Radio Days, hashtag Destination Freedom Black Radio Days.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.